I think it's one way that you can just kind of play something and have it in place and set a mood for whatever it is that you're going to do. There are, of course, lots of things that you can do with music like that. And if you will follow me, we'll try a few things right now. I think you have the idea. Now, what earthly good can it do to have somebody standing up here and doing these sort of contortions while the music is going on? Any idea what the purpose is? Rhythm, okay, number one. What else?
Feeling the music.
Feeling the music, all right. Was I doing things like, No, not at all. The music was, what kind of music would you say?
Gentle,
light, bouncy, and those were the kind of motions that we did. So unconsciously you're building in a feel for what the music is like. Now, you wouldn't do this with babies or very young children, but I wanted to start with something of this kind. We are now ready to start with the tape, so you can begin anytime. I'm going to start first of all today by telling you a little bit about what music education has been like through the years. And you will see three names on the board who were responsible for, during those years, were responsible for kind of the beginning of real interest in children's music education. Up to that time, it had been more just something that had been performed and people had entered into it. Of course, people in all countries of the globe naturally did things with their small children, and there were attempts at teaching music to children in schools, but when these men came along, they were the ones who kind of revolutionized the way that music was taught. The first name up there sounds a little bit like a disease, perhaps. His name is Emil Jacques Dalcroze, and Jacques Dalcroze was a Swiss. He taught at the university, or the conservatory rather, in Geneva. And when he got his conservatory students, who were by that time supposed to be pretty good musicians, they may have been people that had studied a lot during their lifetime. They probably learned an instrument and knew how to play it well. But he discovered that their music was wooden. It didn't mean anything. It didn't have a lilt, it didn't have a bounce, it didn't have anything that you normally associate with music. Maybe they knew the fundamentals pretty well, but they just simply could not get that feel that meant that music meant something and really conveyed an emotion to people. So he decided that he wanted to do something about it and tried very hard to develop a way that his conservatory students could learn to feel music. Well, the way he decided to do it was using the body as an instrument. He felt that for every single solitary sound in the world, there is an appropriate gesture. You can turn that around the other way, and for every sound, there is, did I say that before? Yeah, for every gesture, there is an appropriate sound. And so it can work either direction. So he worked a lot on nuance, and he made people very alert to what was going on. In order to do this, he tried to develop the attention span, because if you can't get people's attention, you might as well forget it. You can't teach anything. Then he tried to get them to remain concentrating on a subject. And he would start very simply wherever they were. It didn't matter whether they were adults or whether they were children. They discovered later that the method worked fully as well with children as it did with adults, with just anyone at all. But you started wherever that person was and then proceeded from there using many of the same sorts of things. He wanted to encourage social integration so that people enjoyed what they were doing together. And he wanted them to listen to every single little thing that would come up. For instance, something as simple as a name game. Tell me your first name.
Jill.
Jill. All right. Can we all say the way she said it? Say it again for them first.
Jill.
Jill.
Try it again.
Jill.
Jill. Jill.
All right. Now, there are many ways of saying Jill. She could have said Jill. She could have said Jill. She could have said Jill and stretched it out. And what he wanted people to do was listen to those tiny little nuances and be able not only to say them, but then to put an appropriate gesture. Can you think of an appropriate gesture that would describe her name? Anything with your hand. Why don't you try it, Jill?
Jill.
Looks good. Jill, let's try it.
Jill. Jill.
All right, what's your name?
Vicky.
Say it again.
Vicky.
Let's all say it.
Vicky. Vicky.
Once more.
Vicky.
Again.
Vicky.
Vicky. All right, let's try it.
Vicky. Vicky.
Would you say it's gentle, or would you say it is has a percussive feel about it?
Percussive.
You think so?
I hear gentleness in your voice.
You hear gentleness.
Yeah.
What about yours?
Mine was more Jill. It was more
kind of straightforward there, yeah. Wasn't it? Let's find a gesture for Vicky. Do you have one, Vicky?
Many.
All right. Let's try it.
Vicky.
Vicky.
Yeah.
Vicky. Okay. And that, too, is kind of a gentle gesture, isn't it? Your name?
Barb.
Can you think of a gesture for it? What would describe Barb? Say it again.
Barb.
Okay, can you think of one? Everybody come up with one for Barb? Let's try it. Let's say it.
Barb.
Okay.
Barb.
Barb. Okay, all right. She has kind of a feel of going this way about it, I think. Okay, somebody else.
Bonnie.
Bonnie. Okay, let's all say it.
Bonnie. Bonnie.
Again.
Bonnie.
Bonnie. All right. And do you have a gesture for it?
It sounded to me like it came up and I dealt with
Bonnie. Yeah, it kind of did, didn't it?
Bonnie.
Yes, and that was really good ears, listening to that nuance. And that's what Jock Dalcroze would like to have you do, is listen to every little thing that happens so that you're aware. That way you can pick up on any sound and any gesture. Let's think of a gesture for Bonnie. Do you have one?
Bonnie.
Bonnie. Try it. Bonnie. Uh-huh. Kind of down and back up, isn't it? Good. Okay. Do you have one? What's your name?
Beth.
Beth?
Beth?
Beth. Okay. Let's all say Beth.
Beth.
Beth. Can we think of a gesture? Do you have one, Beth? Can you say Beth?
Amy.
Amy.
It almost
does
the Bonnie thing.
All right. What about Amy? Can you? Do you have a gesture that would work?
I think I'd go Amy.
But is that the way she said it?
No,
she didn't. No,
she didn't say it that way.
Uh-huh.
Another way. Yes.
Uh-huh. Say your name again.
Amy.
Amy. And that's what she did without thinking. She went, Amy. And she presented it to us on a platter. And that, I think, probably described it better than what she did before, what she thought she was doing. Again, listening. All right, so Jock Dalcroze took that to the extreme, and then he would be doing gestures. He would listen to different kinds of music. For instance, he would have maybe something like this. People would probably walk to it. Would probably do what to it?
March.
What would they do to this? Probably, yeah, okay. And he believed in giving as few directions as he possibly needed to. He wanted people to listen instead, use their ears, and then develop from there. The system can get so terribly complicated that you can find yourself as a musician probably directing 4 beats with one hand, 3 with another one, and stamping out various odd accents with your feet. It goes on and on and on. There is no end to it. It's simply up to the creativity of the teacher. And it is a difficult method to teach because you have to be so thoroughly grounded as a musician in order to do a good job with all of these little nuances that you're supposed to be listening to. A lot of it is improvised. So along came Karl Orff. Nope, not yet. Zoltán Kodály. Kodály was a Hungarian. And he was working at the same time that Dalcroze was working in Switzerland. As you can see, Dalcroze got a head start. And he was really the father of these methods. Kodály took another tact a little bit. And he used the motion that Dalcroze was using, modified it to some degree. Also, he had a strong feeling that the children were not hearing good sounds. That everything that they had to work with was probably just a toy, a drum that just sounded like a thump, for instance, or any kind of sound that was not quality. So he set about having instruments developed that were a beautiful sound. So if you have seen instruments around that people call Orff instruments, they came from this Orff Schulwerk or Orff school. I went on to Orff. Oof, I'm sorry. I was thinking I had him first. Yes, I'm talking about Orff right now in Germany. Mm-hmm. And he was about the same time. So these instruments that you see with bars on them and learn to play, glockenspiel, xylophones, and the like, were developed by Orff. His method used the instruments a great deal, used some movement, and although it was a more stylized movement, you were more often told what to do then you had to think what to do, if you can see that difference. And we'll go into that a little bit. Kodály, that I started off on and then finished with Orff instead, was in Hungary. Orff was Germany. Kodály felt that the Hungarian children were not doing well with music, and he wanted to do something about it. He felt very strongly that folk music was the thing that they needed to do. They needed to get their bearings with their culture through music. And so he designed with some fellow workers a method of teaching music that used the Hungarian folk music as the basis. Hungarian folk music is largely pentatonic, a word you may or may not know, 5-note scale, similar to what the Japanese and the Chinese scales, the Oriental scales are. You can find easily a 5-note scale by simply playing the 5 black keys on the piano, and then it can be shifted to different places. So with all of those 3 things going on about the same time, there was a great reform in music. Those three are still really the basic methods of teaching music today. While Orff used instruments, Dalcroze used the body, and Kodály used the singing voice more. Not that the others didn't, but he used that more than they did. And then he also developed hand signs that was supposed to help children in learning to read music. Now, all 3 of these educators agreed on several things. 1, they felt that movement was probably the most important thing with any given methodology of music. They felt that music was a language, language and needed to be developed as a language. In other words, you don't throw the whole ball of wax at a child when he or she gets into the first, second, or third grade or wherever you decide to try it. But you grow bit by bit, just in the same way that you do if you're learning to speak a language. Then, from there, he would build vocabulary. And what you're, of course, doing with a very young child from birth on is also building this vocabulary. They all agreed that you must work from the ear to the eye. In fact, never learn symbols for music before you have vast experience in the field. You need to feel, you need to do, you need to move, you need to play, you need to do all kinds of things. And then if you are learning the symbols, then they come afterwards. For instance, run, 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 eventually can become two eighth notes that you hold up and say, that's what it looks like. Simple as that. And they have learned it because they feel it. If, on the other hand, you hold up the symbols and say, these are two eighth notes, children. Now, when you run, blah, 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 this is the way they will look. It means nothing. It means nothing at all. Symbols are simply that. Another thing that they all agreed on was that it was very important to start as young as you possibly could. One of the reasons they discovered, or that they felt, that the music in the schools was not working very well was because they didn't start early enough. Kindergarten was the very last time that they thought you could do a good job of initiating a child in the ways of music. So in the Hungarian schools, they started preschool and they started kindergarten and they really worked with music. They did the same thing in Germany, and then when they discovered that the Dalcroze method would work as well for the young children as it did for the conservatory students, then of course the classes for children sprang up as well. There have been some things that have gone back as far as prenatal work, and there have been several people that have been doing a lot of work in this, and they have reported, and of course I have no proof for any of this, but one thing that a sister, Lorna Zemke, is busy with trying to get sounds as close to the fetus as she possibly can, and they have done ultrasound apparently so that they have seen that the fetus will respond to musical sounds in different ways. Leon Thurman of Minneapolis has a whole series of songs out and directions for mothers, and they are called heart sounds that are supposed to be prenatal. Maybe some of you have heard of that. A couple of things that have been reported, and again, I don't know whether they're, you know, factual, they were given as fact. One of the experiments with a fetus was supposed to have been a mother who played a guitar. And when the mother played the guitar on the normal side that she usually did, the fetus would apparently turn toward that sound. And when she would shift it, there would be a great shifting, and the fetus would again shift toward that other side.
That is fact, because I play the guitar, and he would do that.
He would do that, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got a good start then, huh? Another kind of an interesting story that arises out of prenatal work is a young lady who had gotten to be about 18 or 19, and she heard a piece, and it was new to her, and she told her mother, she said, I know that piece. I've heard it before. And her mother said, impossible. You have never heard that piece before, because it hadn't been played. It had been something that had been set down, and I guess it was kind of avant-garde for the time, and it wasn't easy to tell even which note was coming next. And she could hum the next passage. The only place she had ever heard that piece was when her mother was practicing it. I think it was a cello, and she had practiced it during the time that she was pregnant with this baby, and so the baby knew what was coming in the next page, in the next, you know, passage. Well, anyway, this is still a very experimental sort of a thing. So we're going to concentrate today on starting with birth and what, after the baby is born, what do we do with this little helpless bundle that we get? Now, most parents, I think, do this very naturally. It just seems to be something that people of all cultures do. What are some of the sorts of things that you might have done with your children or you have seen others do with their children that you can think of from birth now? Let's take it from birth to about 2 months of age. What would you think would be some of the things they could do?
Well, I have a couple little cassettes of lullabies that are white ones that came with a mobile.
Oh.
I think it's Fisher Price makes a mobile.
Uh-huh.
You can put cassettes in. Anyway, and ever since he was born, when I put him to bed, I put it on.
Uh-huh.
And I still do it, and I think it helps him kind of soothe to sleep.
Yes, uh-huh. They find that babies of that age are very much soothed by music, even quick music, not loud music, but, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's soft or whether it's loud, or fast or whether it's slow. It can be soothing. Okay, anything else you can think of?
I sang to mine when I rocked him.
Uh-huh.
Single natural.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything?
If you're listening to the radio and kind of rocking back and forth with him, or even to speech patterns, if you can. I move with him all the time, and when he's not in my arms, I still move him as if he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that really affects.
Mm-hmm.
Just he recognizes different rhythms and stuff that.
Yes, very much so. Anything else that you can think of? Well, some other suggestions. While you are listening to music, you can be holding the baby and maybe bouncing your knees and tapping the baby's back in time to the music, whatever it might be. Putting music on at a certain time of day, maybe when they are just before they go to sleep, or you might want to have some music playing just so that they hear lots of different types of music, different styles. And I think Baroque music is just wonderful because it's so light and airy, and children really do respond to that. In addition to which, they have discovered that kids, of course, have a much harder, much faster pace than we do. And so their tempos are much faster than ours are. Even as tiny babies, they respond more to the quicker things. So when a baby starts out, you know, his motor control is very poor. There isn't much that he can do. He can blink, and he certainly can cry. And there have been studies done on cries of infants, and they have kind of come to the conclusion that the way a baby cries may in some ways foretell whether he's going to be a particularly musical child or whether he isn't. His cries may range more in a wider, you know, octave range. And we all know that babies' cries vary very much, because as a parent or a caretaker, it certainly doesn't take you very long to know when the baby is just kind of fussing, or when he's disgusted about something, or when he's really urgent about it. And we quickly pick up on those things. So when he's quiet and he sleeps so much until about 2 months of age, but even so, start the music going, whatever it is that you think would be good for him to hear. Then from 2 to 4 months, they are able, of course, to grasp a few things, and they can hear, more aware of what they're hearing. They are beginning to respond maybe very limitedly, with tiny smiles sometimes, and by the time they're 4 months, they certainly are responding more. They learn still through their senses. They aren't intellectual about anything that they do. And as far as the language of music is concerned, they have discovered that they are beginning to be really very comforted by soothing sounds that they hear. And any time that you can associate rocking and singing, or even feeding and humming, or bathing and singing nursery rhymes that might do it, this is going to be a help. From 4 to 6 months, they start their large muscle activity much more, and they can begin to use their cries to get attention. They are beginning to explore just a little bit, and musically and vocabulary-wise, they're beginning to coo a lot. of course, when you start to coo, you get into vowel sounds. And they're sometimes making little chuckles. And again, music seems to be a calming feature for them, a sense of security. And on the 6 through the 9 months of age, while they start to crawl, they're beginning to get more sociable. They know certain objects, and they like being played with. And this is the time when we can start to do so many of these little rhymes and games. One of the books that I'd like to introduce you today, to you today, is Music for Very Little People. This was done by a man whose name is John Feyerabend, and he has done a lot with music for early childhood. In fact, he has classes in Connecticut for mothers coming as early as about 2 years old. And he works with the parents so that they can go home and do something musically with their children. They start out with bounces. And of course, bounces are something that a very young child can do. And they show here lots of different ways that you can bounce your baby, not just on your knee, but you might want to put them on the edge of their knee. You might want to have them sitting up while your legs are over. You might want to put them on your foot when they get old enough. You might want to put them up in the air while you lie down. You might want to hold them out and bounce them up and down. But babies bounce, and that seems to be a feeling like this. It's sort of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, which they've discovered seems to be the baby's natural way of doing things. Then, when the baby gets a little bit older, you can give the baby a bear or a doll, and the baby will probably start to bounce. Now, this is a completely passive activity when you first start out, as far as the baby is concerned. But little by little, they will start to do things that show that they are responding to it. They always stress, never rush the baby. He will do it when he's ready to do it. So in other words, if you feel like it's time for your baby to clap and he doesn't do it through looking at this or through tapping, then you should not take the baby's hands and go bang, 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 because this really doesn't do anything at all. It is rather a sense that they have to pick up on for themselves. And so they suggest the best way of doing it is to have the baby's hand held out maybe like this, and you come up from below and tap the baby's hand. And pretty soon, you might feel that baby's hand starting to go up and down as well. Rocking horses, swings, all kinds of things of that kind. And I'm sure that when you're doing these things, you just kind of automatically do them. I've noticed so many wonderful examples around here since I've been at Holden. I saw a man the other night at Vespers, for instance, and he was sitting and he was rocking his baby in time to the music, and the baby was kind of starting to do this, you know, in a very sort of a passive way. The thing that they seem to stress all along is be very careful not to make your child feel that he or she has to do something. Rather, to let it happen in a very natural sort of a way. Comparing it to language, for instance, when your baby finally says mama, you don't suddenly grab that kid's head and say, now say mama again more clearly, please. But rather, you wait until they say something else, and then you probably repeat it and give them opportunities to say it. But there is no making. And so with the music, with the language of music, it should be the same thing. They suggest a whole lot of little rhymes, for instance, for just bouncing things. And one of them is this. Trot, trot to Boston town to sick, buy a stick of candy. One for you and one for me and one for Dickie Dandy. While you're bouncing the baby in many ways. They suggest using folk songs because folk songs are something that have been used forever and ever. They are usually tuneful. They are usually adaptable. You can stick in something else that you did. Maybe you went someplace that day. You can sing about it, and it's easy to do. I think most of you probably know Ride a Cock Horse to Banbury Cross. Is that a familiar one to you? And if you don't feel that you are a very good singer and don't wish to do that, you can always take some of these rhyming games. They have Well, you know, to market, to buy a fat pig. Home again, jiggity jig. And again, you can do lots of bouncing and that sort of thing. Ride a little horsey down to town. You better be careful so you don't fall down. And here again, we've got bouncing. And then what would you suppose they do at the end? Ride a little horsey, don't fall down. At the end, better be careful so you don't fall down. And of course, kids love that kind of play. It really works out well for them. There is a recording that goes with it. And here, I think that, again, something to think about is that through the years, children have been sung to in many different ways. The interesting part is that our kids are very, very, very much of a mimic. And if they hear a voice that is being used improperly, or if they hear a voice that is very out of tune, that's the way they're going to learn to do it. Now, that's kind of a scary thing. So if you feel that you really don't do very well with things like that, you with it. These are divided for these little people into bounces and wiggles and tickles and tapping and clapping and circles and lullabies. You would probably start with lullabies. Then from there, you would probably be apt to go to bounces. After that, you probably would go to tapping, or you might start the tapping and the lullabies very close together. And then tickles, by tickles, I hasten to say that it isn't really a tickle. I mean, you don't sit and tickle a child, but rather like doing something with a buzzy bee and coming up to their stomachs or something like that, and having a good time with that. I'm going to play you now a little bit of this recording so that you can hear the sort of things that they're working with. And this thing sometimes rewinds and sometimes does not, so I never know exactly what I'm doing with it. This is Mr. Feierabend and the people that work with him who have made this recording. Bluey and Hawks Publishing, a British company.
Be careful or you might fall down. Bounce. Ride a little horsey down to town. You better be careful so you don't fall down. Did you fall down at the end of that? Let's do it again, but be careful. Bounce. Ride a little horsey down to town. You better be careful so you don't fall down.
Ouch.
I can hardly wait until Daddy gets home. When he comes home, he's going to bring me some fish. Bounce. Dance to your daddy, my little laddie. Dance to your daddy, my little man. Thou shalt have a fish and thou shalt have a bin. Thou shalt have a common when the bowl comes in. Thou shalt have a habit for a little band. Dance to your daddy, my is a fair in Banbury. Over there we can get cake and apple pie. Bounce. Ride a white mare to Banbury Fair to see what a penny will buy. A farthing for cake, a farthing for ale, and a halfpenny apple pie. Miss Mary Jane is taking us to a party. We have our favorite clothes on. Let's go riding in the buggy with Miss Mary Jane.
That was an example of some songs with a bounce. The next group is Wiggle. Where it'll turn out, I don't know, because there's no counter on this.
So, which way shall we ride? Oh, to the countryside, oh, to find a pretty bride.
start to gallop. They gallop faster and faster and faster until they tire themselves right out. Bounce, 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 bounce. See the pony galloping, galloping down the country lane. See the pony galloping, galloping down the country lane. See the pony galloping, galloping down the country lane.
Notice a change in tempo. Going a little bit faster.
All tired out. All tired out.
Slowing down again. Now, when you get to something like that, it's more sophisticated because the child is now beginning to associate mood with slowing down or speeding up. The horse is going faster, and these are just some of the ways in which they build musical, intuitive vocabulary to use as time goes on. There are lots of other little games. There are tickles. Round and round the haystack is one. Talking about little mice creeping up the arm, you can, and the mouse can go under the house and so forth. There are just all kinds of these in here, and I think a really excellent book. One that goes slowly, slowly, very slowly creeps the garden snail. Now, what do you think is going to be more difficult, the fast ones or the slow ones for the children? The slow ones, yeah, because that just is not their tempo. The bee went to the barn with bagpipes under his arm and said bzzz and things like that. Now we're getting into buzzy sounds that maybe the child can learn to imitate. Then the tapping songs. One is Johnny, 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 whoops. Johnny, whoops, Johnny, 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 Johnny. Using your fingers for little things like that. And lots of fun things to do. Clapping games, clap, clap, clap your hands. Clap your hands together. Clap, clap, clap your hands. Clap your hands together. Anybody know that? Clap. Clap, let's sing it. Clap, clap, clap your hands together. Clap, clap, clap your hands together. One good thing to remember about clapping games is that clapping is not so much about the noise you make as about the getting there. And it's better if they don't do this sort of thing because that really just kind of kills it. So the lighter, the better. And lots of patty cake, of course, is an old one, hot cross buns. Then they get to the point where they can start to make circles, not with lots of people, but maybe just with you, or maybe with you and a doll, so that they get the idea of going around in a circle. And of course, you're doing the work at this point, but that they can feel it. And it feels different from going in a straight line. Three times around with the gallant ship, another one. Three times around with the gallant ship, and three times around with she. Three times around with the gallant ship, and we sunk to the bottom of the sea. And of course, the kids will sink to the bottom of the sea. Lullabies, some lovely ones. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Papa's gonna buy you a mockingbird, in many verses, which you can make up yourself too. They believe that kids should be introduced both to major and minor feels, and so it's good for them to get that. Now, a word of warning for you about buying children's recordings. There are so many out there, and there are so many dreadful ones that probably do more harm than good. Usually, or very often on those, the singing will be just very, very poor. Maybe harsh, strident, that sort of thing. Maybe slipping and sliding around on the notes and that sort of thing. If you are trying to build in pitch, look for really good recordings. You noticed how light and clear and airy these voices are. And a child's voice should always be that way, because if they sing harsh and heavy, they can do their little vocal cords, vocal folds, really a great deal of harm in their development stages. Not only in development stages, we as adults can too. Yes?
Do you have suggestions of good artists, children's artists?
These certainly are good. I would, let's see, it's hard to think right off the top of my head.
I know one really good, I have signed ones on this right here, so I'm really into that too. I have one, it's called Lullabies and Goodnight, and it's done very well with a very soft kind of lullaby, and all her notes are very clear. I don't know who the artist is, but it comes with a book, and it's original. They've taken old poems like by Eugene Field and all the old artists about children and turned them into actual songs. It's wonderful. You can find it in almost any bookstore. And Timothy will go to sleep without it.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah.
Not one around here on the tape recorder.
Yeah. There are some folk singers, of course, that are not dangerous, you know, light voices, but I would never let them listen to as a role model to something that is harsh and heavy. I think also that at this stage then, classical music or anything again that is kind of a light feel about it that you can start to play. Implications for the church. One church I know in Minneapolis, Westwood Lutheran Church, under Ron Nelson's direction, has made several recordings. And whenever a child is baptized, these recordings are all of hymns that they regularly use at church. And he gives each child, they give each child, a recording of the hymns, maybe some of the liturgy of their church. And they are instructed to please play that when the child is doing quiet activities or maybe just before they're going to sleep. And it's amazing how much they pick up of learning these hymns. I think that we really are kind of missing the boat in the church a lot of the time, because we're so busy teaching children what we think of as being children's songs and little ditties at Sunday school. And then we ask them to come to church, and they, of course, don't know one single solitary thing that's going on, and they're bored to death. When instead, at Sunday school, we should be teaching them portions of hymns. Very young children can learn just maybe a phrase or a refrain from a well-known hymn that you sing at church. I've heard, again, from Holden here, I heard a little boy the other night, every time an amen was said, he said, amen, right afterwards. And I thought, great, you know, he's really catching worship. So many of these things are caught rather than taught. And I think music is one of them. I think worship is something else. And if we start early and include them and maybe just teach them as when they're able to start singing some of these little things, it really helps a great deal. I feel that our hymn book and our service should, for the Sunday school, be the basic text. It can be made interesting. It isn't old and stodgy for them. If you kids really pick up on it, and they will choose some of the very best hymns as being their very favorites after they have had a chance to learn them. But of course, that is the key, isn't it? We all like what we know. And if we don't have a chance to learn them, obviously, we're not going to like them. So I think that we really need to do some work along that way. On that same tact, I saw a little girl the other day here at worship, and she was standing there. Oh, she was adorable. She had on little shorts and bows on her back, and she was standing there with a book upside down and singing right along with everybody else. And I know she thought that she was really worshiping. Again, an idea that is caught rather than taught, and she'll probably be one of our great worshipers when the time comes, that she can actually enter into more. Well, going on, we have things, of course, get more complicated as life goes on. And we have another one of these books that comes up, which is called Music for Little People. This one was for very little people. Now we have Music for Little People. And this is supposed to be for preschool children and early elementary. There, of course, is no definite age grouping, because you never know when a child is going to do what. It's more definite at those early stages. But as they get older,
Maybe a 2-year-old might even be able to do many of these things that they suggest for 3 years old and above. Maybe they won't be able to do it till they're 4 or 5. If not, don't panic. It's just that they're not ready. Then you back up one step and you just keep working with the bounces and the tapping and the wiggles and the listening and getting them to move their bodies around. Now, how can we get them to become more acquainted with their bodies? Dalcroze, of course, was the expert in that. And if you ever hear of any Dalcroze classes for young children being taught in your area, run, don't walk, because they are wonderful. How does Dalcroze, eurythmics means good rhythm or flowing rhythm. If a child is taught dance at an early age, it differs from Dalcroze eurythmics, especially in the process. And the process with Dalcroze was what was all important to him. He would feel these things. The dance is more stylized and teaches definite steps. It does not teach the child to listen as well to what they're hearing and that sort of thing. It does not, it may increase their attention span, but is not directed toward that definitely. So the differences in the process and the Dalcroze eurythmics are just great. ORF classes would probably do many of the same things in a little different way. And then there have been lots of classes that have been developed for kids. Yamaha has come out with one. Suzuki probably has, huh? Yeah, I don't know those well.
I had Bonnie at Kelly last year, 2 years ago in Yamaha, and I was very good.
You were pleased with it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, they were taking the little instruments and putting percussion instruments and cymbals, and they would each take a part, and then they would, through the direction of the teacher, do a little orchestra, and they all did their little part.
Uh-huh.
I had never been musical, and it was the first time I'd experienced being part of a musical group. It was so mm-hmm. fun. It was
great.
Wonderful. So I think I enjoyed it probably.
Well, they have a lot of these in cities. I think there's one in our area called the Musical Trolley, and they vary in the way they approach kids. I guess if I were going to enroll a child in one of those, I would visit it first, and the criteria that I would use to decide whether or not it was doing a good job was, one, do they allow the children freedom of creativity? Or are they always saying, now you beat 1, 2, 3, 4 times, and then you do twice on this one? That really doesn't teach them to think. It teaches them to follow. And following is not a bad thing, but it does stifle the creativity to somewhat. Now, again, I'm not suggesting that the kids run wild while they're there, because music is a discipline-based subject, and it has to be creative within bounds. So if you come and you find everybody is just running pell-mell around, then I would certainly not suggest that would be a good thing either. But I think the thing that you have to do is watch to see whether they are allowing these kids to develop at a natural pace. Another thing I would look for is, do they give them busy work with their hands to do, maybe on paper? And if they do that, I would just cross it off my list really quickly, because they're not ready for that. It must be an active sort of a thing all of the time. And the more experiential it can be, the better it's going to be. So just those 2-3 things, I think, would be things that you could look for that might help you to recognize whether it is, in fact, good for your child or not so good for your child. Spontaneous education is the best. And when they start, even with classes with 2-year-olds, by the people that are doing this sort of thing, the child can be completely passive during the whole thing, with the mother doing all of these things and the child just standing there going, oh, and they will not say a word. The child is not in any way encouraged to do it, except maybe, you know, through the bounces and the tapping and that sort of thing. But if they don't respond, they don't say, now you be a good little boy or girl and I want you to do this today. It's just ignored. And usually after a few times, they will join in. At home, you can sing frequently.
do nursery rhymes, discuss things when they get old enough to be high and low. For instance, you might take a drum and see if they can hear the difference. Now, why don't we just all kind of stand up where we are and see if you can just kind of move to whatever you think you're hearing with your feet. What would you do if I did this? Okay, now you notice I didn't say, now you're going to run, children. But instead, you hear what the drum does and you do what the drum tells you to do. All right, let's try this. It's hard when we're not moving, but this is not the place to do that. Skipping, or it could be a galloping, and kids more often will gallop at that age, I think, than they will skip. I mean, when you start with the very little ones who are able to do that sort of thing. Then from there on, you'd probably, now this is more Dalcroze than anything that I'm doing. Here, then after that, you would probably try to learn levels. And you would say, when you hear the high drum, you will go up higher. When you hear the lower drum, you will go down lower. And you would play high and low for them. Okay, so show me with your body now when you are hearing high and when you're hearing low. That sort of thing. Making them aware of different kinds of sounds. If you were going to hear these, okay, now that gives the child an idea that music takes up space and they can learn to differentiate sounds. They can learn what finger cymbals are. They can learn, do they ring a long time or a short time? Really, a long time. How about this? Does this ring a long time or a short time?
Short.
Very short time, doesn't it? Can you make some kind of a motion with your hands that would show that you hear this? Good. Can you make a motion with your arms or hands that show that you hear this? And don't quit the motion until all the sounds. Okay, so there again, they're learning to differentiate lengths of sounds. What about this one? Can you show that one? Lovely, aren't they? This is in lieu of wood blocks or anything, and it's good to use natural sounds as well. And here is one of those instruments that they've been using over in the handmade, which anybody could do. Can you? Can you describe that somehow with your body? Now, children do need help in learning how to work with their body. If you say move, it doesn't happen. You may have to start with the little finger games. You may have to say move only your thumb to the music that you hear. Next, move only your fingers. Move only your hands. Move only your arms, and then have them discover different kinds. Can you think of a way to show this with just your fingers? Can you think of a way to show this with your foot? Can you think of another way to show that motion with your foot? Can you think of a way with one hand, or one arm rather, the whole arm, to show this kind of emotion? This doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Yeah, it. What I wanted it to do was to roll, but it isn't rolling with it.
And you can think of all kinds of things. You might do things like dropping a rock down on the floor and saying, can you show that? Very little children will act, or showing a feather, throwing a feather in the air and say, can you be that feather coming down? Play games with them as far as time and space are concerned. You might have them, everybody stand for a moment and see if you can stretch way up to the top and all be candles. Now that candle is going to burn, and the candle is going to go down to the floor while I count to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Exactly. Okay. And then experiencing different lengths of time. The candle's going to burn fast this time. 1, 2, 3. And they have to get their bodies to move at the time that you have counted. You can vary from that in saying, walk your way over to the door and count to 5 and see if you can make it in 5 counts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Didn't make it, did I? Whoops, too short. So then you have to go back and see if you can make it come out right with the counting when they're old enough to count. So there are all kinds of things that you will do, and I hope that maybe this gives an idea of some of the things that you can do with your children at home. And it makes for a wonderful, wonderful playtime, and there's no reason why directions can't be sung instead of said, why we can't play games while they're doing things, and instilling this wonderful word of music. In Kodai's word, who was really a very fine person to make up all kinds of articulate sort of sayings, one thing he said was, nothing but the best is good enough for the child. And it is more important who is in the elementary school in a city in Hungary than it is who is at the opera house in Bucharest. So I'll leave you with those words.